iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com. iGlobalNews.com.
Hello and welcome to the iSpirituality Show right here on iGlobal Radio, where we bring you the very best in experts and people in the know. Today we're talking about spirituality in modern life, and spirituality does exist in many forms. Now for some, being spirituals synonymous with rituals and traditions, and for others, spirituality exists in simple awareness of the present moment, or through specific practices like compassion and meditation and many other forms of the modern day spirituality that we're going to be talking about here today. So we managed to find just the perfect person in the know to talk about that with us here today, and his name is Dhruv Chitralia, who joins us today on the show. Dhruv, welcome to the iSpirituality Show with us here on iGlobal, and we welcome you today.
Delighted to be here, and my best wishes to you, and lots of love and blessings to you all, and I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
So let's talk about spirituality in the modern sense, as it were. So I wanted to just touch on the fact that the difference between spirituality and materiality, but just before I do that, what is it that qualifies you to talk about this? And I don't mean that at all in an intimidating way. Give us a little bit of history about your background that enticed you, encouraged you, and brought you into this realm of life that we're talking about here today.
Thank you, Tony. It's a good question, and it's a very, very long story, which I'll try and make as short as possible. So I was just a normal boy growing up. I did my prayers. I did my rituals growing up. I went through law school. It was in my final year of law school where it was quite a like a stiff situation to be in, and it was quite a like a intense and stressful situation to be in. It was one day when I went down to my grandmother who lived with us, and she was watching one of the Indian saints when I sat down with her, and I saw that experience. I had this experience like no other when I saw like the universal compassion that I see in the eyes of the saint. We always have compassion, but we have compassion towards our loved ones, towards our friends. When you have this universal compassion, this love for all, it really struck me. I had to go inside a room, and tears came out of my eyes because of the experience. But no, nothing much happened after that. I just kind of went through my law school exams, but I got the job that I wanted. But in between, in law, they offer you jobs in advance because there's intakes of trainee lawyers. So I took some time out in the gap and went traveling around the world. It's when I went traveling around the world, I started reading different philosophies from all over the world, different schools of thought. It's when I reached India, in particular the Himalayas, and the richness of the Indian spiritual traditions really went to my heart, and I started studying more, and I sat at the feet of great yogis, great what we call Mahapurush, great spiritual personalities, and learned from them. And one of them asked me to write a commentary on the Bhagavad Gita based on what I learned. That was a two-year journey while I was practicing law at my law firm. So I'd do that on weekends and evenings. And lo and behold, 2 years later, the entire commentary was done. It was 3,200 pages. Then the same one of the Hanuman Chalisa, the Sri Suktam of the Rig Veda. And so, yeah, that commentary was done. And then he asked me to start giving talks on it. So this whole journey hasn't been chosen by me. It chose me. It came to me. And so after about 350 talks, we're here today. Those talks have obviously reached places such as Parliament, the city, and so on. And it's been an incredible experience I've came across. So everything that I am today, it's because of the blessings of people who are greater than me and what I've learned from them. And nothing that I talk about is original. Everything that I talk about is something that's been given to me in the scriptures. Why am I qualified to do this? I don't think I'll ever be qualified to be the rightful spokesperson of our scriptures. All I can say is that I've been what we call tapasya in our scriptures, which is going through a rigorous and a hard process in order to attain the qualification to speak, which is all the years of contemplation, meditation, on the scriptures and working on myself. So what I'm speaking about is not just it's not just the theory. It's something because I practice it in my own life. I teach it out there, and I agree with the view that not everyone is qualified to speak on spirituality, and I can never say that I'm a self-realized person. All I can say is that I've studied the scriptures in detail in the traditional way, and I've been given the authorization from a guru to be able to speak. And it is because of their blessings, the gurus and the teachers' blessings, that I am here speaking today. So it was never decided by me, never chosen by me, but I had to earn it through the rigorous process.
This is the iSpirituality Show from iGlobal. Find out more about the iSpirituality Show and other big events such as the Great Big Indian Money Show on the 26th and 27th of March by logging on to the iGlobal event section on iglobalnews.com. Part of your spiritual journey that you've explained to us in such a detailed and wonderful form, for which I almost feel envious of, I feel that you have to be perceptive to change, perceptive to acceptance of these things, both in your mind, in your heart, and your soul. It's something that your body is either programmed to receive, or something that you say, right, I'm now going to become a spiritualist as of today. It doesn't quite happen like that. It's something that you have to be accepting of. Briefly, just talk about that to us, Drew.
Yes, another very good question, Tony. Thank you. So there was a story in ancient times in India where the Buddha was coming to give a discourse in this town. And there was someone who was very religious person, very rigorous person. So he went up to the Buddha and asked him, do you believe in God? And Buddha said, no. He was really, really shocked because he thought this is a spiritual person coming to speak and he doesn't believe in God. So everyone in the town thought, great, there's no God. We can do whatever we want. There's no need for morality, whatever. A few days later, another person who was a complete atheist or materialist went up to the Buddha and said, do you believe in God? He said, yes. And he said, I'm shocked because you told the other person that you don't and you told me that you do. And he said that the problem is not the answer, but the fact that you put the word believe, whether we believe in something or don't believe in something, which is beyond our comprehension, we've automatically failed in that test because we've tried to judge something according to our limited perceptions. Very few people have the courage to say, I don't know. And it takes a lot of courage and it takes a lot of qualifications to be able to say, I don't know, so I want to know. And I often find, because if you look at the Vedic tradition, it has so many different branches. You have like the Vedanta branches, which is about the study of metaphysics. You have the Purva Mimamsa, which is all about the rituals. You have Samkhya, which is about enumeration, how the one becomes many. You have yoga, which is about the process, the scientific process to self-realization. And you have the others as well, which are more about Nyaya, Vaishika, which is more about logic, atomic theory, and so on. And then you have the different branches. You have Ayurveda, you have Jyotish, the astrology, the Ayurveda, the medical science. You have Dhanurveda, which is the martial arts. So you have Sapana Vedya, which is more the architecture, the Vastu. So I find this vast kind of amount of knowledge. Very people are so close to such a small amount of knowledge and they feel, oh, I don't want to learn. I felt that traveling around the world really, and especially in India, really opened my mind to things because there's various societies in the world that do things completely different from us. A perfect example was given when there was this cricket series, India versus England recently. The English people couldn't take the fact that India has spinning pitches, whereas we're used to pace pitches. It's not either better or worse. It's just their way of doing things. And this is our way of doing things, just the same way that we think that we bowl on fast-paced pitches. All pitches should be fast-paced. They feel that everyone should be bowling on spinning pitches. So it's people being very closed off to different perceptions of doing things. And in the same way, and like when you look at India, when you go to walk down the streets, not just India, but Far Eastern countries, you just see chaos in the roads everywhere. That's because people are comfortable with chaos.
This is the iSpirituality Show from iGlobal. Find out more about the iSpirituality Show and other big events such as the Great Big Indian Money Show on the 26th and 27th of March by logging on to the iGlobal event section on iglobalnews.com. So let's talk about, and I mentioned this in my introduction briefly today, the difference between spirituality and materiality, which you've covered briefly already. What is, Drew, the actual role of spirituality in today's modern times? I'm going to call them modern times because we're in the 21st century, so we can call it modern times. What is the role of spirituality in today's times?
So when one looks at society, there's two ways of measuring it. One is the way of materiality, and the other is a way of spirituality. So you can measure a person materially, and you can also measure them spiritually. So when you use the way of materiality, we look at what one possesses, and this becomes important. So who has what? How big is his house? How many cars does he have? What's his business?
Material things, the assets. What car does he drive, or what house does he live in? So, yeah, okay. And we're spurred on by that, are we, in spirituality?
Yeah, exactly. So in materiality, how much one possesses and what one has becomes important. But when you measure someone by the way of spirituality, what you have is not important, but what you are is important. Having does not become important in spirituality, but being becomes important. And that realization and shape of being is wonderful. So I feel that the problems and miseries of the modern age are mainly as a result, in my opinion, of this predominance of materiality and the forgetting of spirituality, because nowadays people are measured by what they have and not who they are. And everyone wants to prove himself first in front of himself first, in front of his family second, in front of his society or group like relatives, friends, acquaintances third, and then finally in front of the world at large. So every person's trying to prove himself. And when everyone tries to prove themselves, all they can see is, and all they look for in another person is what that person has got.
That leads me really nicely into my next question to you, and that is, you talk about material things. Why do people run after material objects in this world? You've already answered it to a certain degree, but why do they do that? What's the thinking behind this?
It's largely because they feel incomplete. So because a person feels incomplete, if I have this thing in my life, I will become complete. So if I am poor, I want to get money so I become rich. If I'm uneducated, I want to study so I can become educated. So because we attach this I next to something, I am this other person, we feel a sense of incompleteness. But what the spirituality teaches is that we are complete. Purnamidam, Purnamidam, which is one of the mantras from the Upanishads, we say that I am the whole. When you take the whole out of the whole, nothing is left but the whole, the entirety. When we identify with the complete and we see we are the complete, we are the universe, then there is nothing left to desire. So desires are not by themselves bad. It's when the desires become excessive and start affecting us on the inside, when we start running after the objects. There's nothing wrong with desire. In fact, Indian culture, we have the goddesses of wealth, the goddess of knowledge, which represent things that people ordinarily desire. And when they're used for really good constructive purposes, like you're donating your wealth to a good cause, like a spiritual cause or feeding someone, that's a very good use of wealth. And that's a good reason to earn wealth. So it's definitely not kind of life negative, but it's when those desires become excessive, when limits are crossed, when those desires run us, when those desires change our perception of who we are, when we feel that I am limited, I am not a complete person, that's what happens there. But yeah, the desires come as a result of a feeling of incompleteness.
This is the iSpirituality Show from iGlobal. Find out more about the iSpirituality Show and other big events such as the Great Big End in Money Show on the 26th and 27th of March by logging on to the iGlobal event section on iglobalnews.com. So in these changing times that we're now facing, we're actually inspired by what we see and hear, particularly on social media and the internet. One of the things that does come to my mind through is the fact that a lot of young people, youngsters, are either getting into spirituality or they don't have the direction or the know-how of how to get into spirituality. Why is it important, in your opinion, to practice spirituality from a young age?
Okay, no, it's a very good question, and thank you for asking that question. It's I feel that from a young age, we lose a lot of, energy when we go into latter ages in life, and we feel like we spent all our life chasing after certain objects and wasted our time. But have never focused on ourselves and who we are, the bigger questions. It's when these bigger questions get answered earlier that you have clarity in your life. People always think that confidence is the most important thing, but it's clarity that's the most important thing. For example, if you're crossing a road, you may have confidence that I can cross this road easily, but it's that clarity that is required to cross that road. In the same way in life, if you have the confidence but you don't have the clarity, you're going to make mistakes in life, you're going to make the wrong decisions in life. So knowing what your dharma is, knowing what your purpose why you're here, knowing kind of the reason behind that gives you that direction from the beginning. It's very interesting that I feel that a lot of people are turning into spirituality, but they're feeling like they're outsourcing their knowledge to Google, and they're letting Google answer all their questions for them. But there's a lot of power. It's more powerful when you actually become more creative and actually practice spirituality yourself. So rather than becoming a consumer of spirituality, you become a practitioner of spirituality. That is very, very important in today's time. Making it part of the curriculum is so important because having those life skills in ancient India, they didn't let people go into the school until the age of 11 because they taught them the process of identification. When you identify yourself with the wrong thing, like I am the body or whatever, that knowledge becomes dangerous. So they taught them not to identify themselves with the body or the mind, but to identify themselves with the universe and the Atma before they actually started the education process. And so it was a very, very kind of formulaic way of doing things. But now we're just thrown into university or school earlier in the primary school, and we're taught to learn all these different forms of knowledge without getting the identification right. So while these are forms of knowledge, never really help us in life, in our spiritual journey. And also importantly, a lot of what we learn at school, how is just kind of learning 4 times 2 or 12 times 2 going to help you with the life skills? Those life skills are very, very important, and practical knowledge and life skills are definitely missing.
This is the iSpirituality Show from iGlobal. Find out more about the iSpirituality Show and other big events such as the Great Big Indian Money Show on the 26th and 27th of March by logging on to the iGlobal event section on iglobalnews.com. Okay, so we have spoken about spirituality from a young age, the conception of it and what our thoughts are of it. As far as the modern day workplace is concerned, can you give us some examples of how we can become better team players at work through spirituality, Dhruv?
Yeah, no, I can kind of give several examples. I feel that before people go on that spiritual journey, when you're working with team players or members of your team and you're giving them feedback, people are either like overtly critical or sometimes are scared to be critical, but thinking in their mind, why did they do that? When you practice the spiritual journey, you learn to become much more patient with people. When you become more patient with people, that relationship develops. You don't kind of try to become kind of like in a relationship, in a work relationship, just for kind of superficial reasons. We're actually there to care about the other person. The mark of a true team player and the true leader is that when you ask someone do you actually care about their answer? And because a lot of people ask that question but don't really care about the answer. It's when you actually care about the answer, when you actually care about that individual person, that their well-being, their development, that true leadership comes, a true team play comes. And there's a perfect example that is given in the Mahabharata war, where you have the Kauravas who are on the bad side, the Pandavas are on the good side. But in the Kauravas, they were kind of had the order in which they blew their conches, because at the beginning of the war, you blow conches, and the Kauravas blow their conches in a very disciplined order. So the commander in chief of the army blow the conches, and then you go in the order. But if you go in the side of the Pandavas, Krishna blew conch, then the five brothers of the Pandavas, and the king of Kashi, there was no discipline. The commander-in-chief of the army did not blow the first conch, and even the five brothers didn't blow the conches in that age order. And there's no order in this. It seems like a random order, but there's a big meaning behind that. When people are running out after the names, the work will never be successful. So in the Cordoba's army, the name was the commander chief was taken, and nobody else's name was taken, because then there would be a battle of the names. He had the status, and then nobody said anything.
Thank you for listening to the iMoney Show, brought to you by iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. Find out more on iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobalNews.com.
To conclude today, tell us the organization that you represent and how people can get in touch with you to gain more information and be even a part of your organization with yourselves and the great work that you're doing.
Thank you, Jeremy. Yeah, so we have our website, which is www.gitaclass.org, so GITAclass.org, all one word. And so there's a huge amount of resources, including on the topics we discussed today, but many other topics. If people have questions in their life, they can learn the answers. We have our online Bhagavad Gita courses, as well as courses on some of the other scriptures as well. So it's all readily available. And we have 34 WhatsApp groups in our organization. So there's a number I can give you, 07904-720516. And there's an incredible amount of opportunities if people want to volunteer, become part of the organization, become teachers after completing the courses and passing the tests. So there's great opportunities to be involved. And we're always looking for more volunteers and more speakers to assist in our activities, because after doing this for 11 years, there's a big demand for our talks. And we're always looking to send new people and develop their skills in becoming leaders and becoming speakers of this rich tradition. So, thank you, Tony. It was delightful to have our first session with you.
Thank you very much, Dean. And there will be many, many more. Thank you very much, Dean, for joining us today.
iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobalNews.com.